Welcome to Combo Smite, the War Machine and Horde's Battle Report podcast brought to you by an Imperial Lackey, an overpowered Swan, and an angry Elf. This week's Combo Smite brought to you by the 15th Annual Rulik Swimsuit Competition. For only 15 Duguls or 20 Signarin Towers, we promise not to come to your city. This is an event that you absolutely want to miss. Welcome to Combo Smite. I'm your host, Mark, and I play Signar and Menoth.
I'm Nick, and this week I'm playing Dwarfs.
I'm Aaron, I play Kador and Mercenaries.
All right, and before we get into the battle report this week, which is Aaron's Kador against Nick's Seer Forge, you actually weren't playing Seer Forge, you were playing Highborn?
Yeah, I was playing Gorton, but I was running him under Highborn, right, with a bunch of juicy mercs.
So before we get into that, which is actually a really good battle report, I want to talk about news and announcements. So who wants to go first before Nick has a chance to gush on infinitely about the Retribution
my
caster?
Yeah, my hand's up in the air right now.
All right, Nicholas, lay it on us.
Oh, the stats were spoiled on, I think it was like Tuesday night or something like that, for Assyria, the new Retribution caster who's going to be coming out next month and eventually in the Vengeance book. And, oh man, is she ever good? I mean, like, just, I'm super excited. Her feat gives true sight and gives, like, basically a better version of Signs Importance to everything in her control area, which is 16 inches. So it's just like, It's a bonkers feat. I mean, the downside is that she herself can't do anything at all. She literally can never harm an enemy model at all. She has nothing that can damage anybody. So it takes some getting used to. I would have been like ecstatic if she had like a cost 2 nuke on her and she could just like zap some enemies once in a while. It would be kind of cool. But I mean, I understand why they went the way they did. But you know, she's got one pretty awesome debuff, Crusader's Call for threat range. Admonition for safety. She's got the velocity to get around the board, and you know, she's got a really good packet of spells that are just you know, they're pretty key. She also has the star action ancillary attack, which is pretty awesome. You know, you can fire out, you know, with a Hyperion, you can fire out or maybe two sprays from Disco are also pretty powerful. So I mean, there's lots of sweet possibilities. Really, you know, one thing I'm hoping to see is more people trying to play Rhett competitively because of this new caster. Because one thing Rhett was really missing was like a real top tier caster, and so hopefully she turns out to be that good, and right, we'll see more representation at major events.
Well, I'm sure the Retribution forums have, you know, taken all this in stride and barely even noticed her release.
Oh man, they exploded on Tuesday. At one point I looked at the front page of the Ret forums, and of about the first 13 threads, 12 of them, 11 of them were about Assyria. One of them was a speculation thread about the stats of Imperatus, and one of them was a Hyperion Tactica, which had just been updated to include stuff about Assyria. So yeah, it's safe to say that the Ret forum is quite excited.
Yeah, I think, okay, for starters, it's a beautiful model. Like, she's... Aaron, you don't like the model, right?
I love it.
I never said that.
Oh, I thought you said you didn't like the sculpt. Somebody said they didn't. Oh, maybe it was Kasim. Anyways, doesn't matter. I think it's a beautiful sculpt. And it's a small base, which is fantastic. I really thought it was on a medium base, which would have made her, you know, a lot harder to keep alive.
Yeah,
but on a small
medium base
with
armor 13 would be very... That would be a dirty trick.
Yeah.
On Privateer Press's part.
Yeah. But, I mean, the trade-off is that she has a large control range, and, you know, even with armor 13, the chances of assassinating her, it's going to be tough. I mean, even Kane would be pushing his luck trying to get close enough to kill her.
Yeah, I mean, you know, there's a select few individuals on the forums that are still very distraught over the armor 13, but I really don't think it's going to be a problem because she can play so far back that I think that the risk of her being assassinated is very low as long as she's played correctly, but that's true of a lot of top-tier casters.
Yeah. No, I absolutely agree. But let's be honest. If she was defense 20 and armor 25, there would still be people complaining about it. So.
Well, it is the internet, so.
Yeah, exactly. The internet is full of stupid people.
Well, were there people that were saying, or maybe speculating, or would are you of the mind that, say, if they dropped, if she dropped one of her lesser spells to get like two extra armor, would that have been better? Like, do you think that's what people would have wanted?
Well, I mean, they wouldn't have dropped spells. They would have probably just given her some shitty spells, because she only has five spells as it is.
only.
Well, I mean, most warcasters have more than that. Warlocks.
Not in Signar, dude.
Okay, well. I mean, well, okay, Ron has like six or seven.
Yeah.
And he's our other focus state caster. But I honestly found, well, I've playtested just once so far. And I found that I actually didn't have anything to spend the focus on most turns.
Wow.
So like, I actually had too much focus. So maybe I just need to run maybe more jacks with her.
Well, yeah, that's exactly it.
Which it's okay with me. I love running jacks. Jacks are honestly like one of the main reasons why we got into the game, because we love the idea of big stompy robots. And so it's unfortunate that most War Machine casters, you know, are much better at running infantry than they are running jacks. And so you rarely see very jack heavy lists, except for a select few casters.
Yeah.
And so, you know, I like the idea of running more jacks.
No, I agree. I think it'll be awesome. I don't think there was anything else released.
Well, I mean, the Gorshade 3 also came out.
But
the stats, I mean.
Let's be honest. Nobody besides Crix cares, and they're all complaining. So,
yeah, they don't seem to be too happy. I mean, there's actually a fairly vocal contingent of both sides. Some people that really like him, some people that really hate him. So,
yeah,
I guess we'll have to see until we see some playtesting.
Yeah, you mentioned briefly that you hope that. Her name is Isara.
Isiria.
You mentioned that you hoped Isiria would help elevate retribution into actual competition for tournaments and such.
The skill of a player at the end of the day is more important than what they're playing with generally. A good player will beat a shitty player with either army, like, you know, whatever armor they're playing most of the time. Just the way War Machine is, because it's a very balanced game. And but the thing is that at tournaments, ret is very underrepresented because people consider it weaker, you know, so it's more of an uphill battle to win with ret because it's not as strong. That's a popular opinion. Whether or not it's correct, I don't necessarily know if I agree.
Well, I was just going to ask that if Isiria is one of the casters that you see now as a tournament caliber for Retribution, who do you think will be taking the second spot? Like, if you're Isiria is running your jack heavy or infantry supporting list, who do you think is going to be the most popular list too? Because you can't run one list tournaments. Well, you can, but it's not often.
It's a good question. Because different people make lists in different ways. Typically, people start with a main caster who's their main drop, and then they'll have another caster that can just cover the bad matchups, and that's where they go from. I'm not really sure who would cover her bad matchups, but probably someone like Vyros too. So like you match up you have her with like some kind of really crazy melee and ranged attrition list,
right?
And then you have a Vyros 2 Griffin spam list as your backup, and they're so different that it creates a lot of interesting challenges in list chicken.
Interesting. Cool. All right then. So as I mentioned earlier, this week we had Highborn Coven. And the Gorton going up against Kador with P. Irusk. Aaron, why don't we start with you? Talk a little bit about the list you made and your rationale behind it.
The list is mostly comprised of models that I just finished painting, and I really wanted to use.
Some of the best tactical justification for an army I've heard in quite some time.
That's kind of how we roll. We are, after all, the ultra-competitive meta.
Totally.
Super, duper competitive. Well, I think militarily that's how it would work. As soon as you make a really advanced tank, you want to get it out in the field.
This is true.
So if I get some brand new units, I want to get them out and see how they work.
All right.
Not necessarily perfect analogy, because they work only to maximum effectiveness based on the other units they're with. So not completely accurate. But yeah, I finished the Behemoth, which is the Extremoth mod, the Iron Fang Kovnik, Iris himself, and the Grey Lord Outriders. So I wanted to put them all into a list and use them all. In addition to those, I had Spriggan, the Winter Guard Death Star, Kovnik Joe, and Max Assault Commandos with two flamethrowers. The idea, I guess, was that the Winter Guard, they're tried and true. I know what they can do. They work well, just on their own, and really with anyone. Obviously, a little bit better with the Usorsha, but on their own, they work. I think they work well with any caster. The Assault Commandos I wanted to use because they have Shield Wall, and the Iron Fang Kovnik gives them a bonus plus two speed if they advance in Shield Wall. So I
Right.
wanted to take advantage of that. In addition, I thought that since they had two attacks, even though they're not high power attacks, that they could make use of Battle Lust, which is one of Iris' spells that gives them fearless and an additional die on attack. So
Huh.
to become Weapon Master is pretty awesome.
Yes, it is.
Other than that, I just wanted to get the new units out there.
Very cool. All right, having played the game, what would you change at this list if you were doing it over again?
Spriggan didn't work as well as I thought, but then again, he didn't really do a whole bunch, so maybe that was my fault. I had brought him to make use of Flare, because I thought that if Nick brought the Arcanist Corps, they're going to lay down some cloud effects, and at least that way I can use Spriggan to
Right.
cancel them. And I didn't really use them that effectively. But again, that was my fault, not Spriggan's fault. And maybe change out the Assault Commandos for Shock Troopers, because they would still benefit from the Iron Fang Kovnik's Shield Wall order. But they did pretty well, so I think I was pretty happy with the list even at the end of end of the game.
All right, Nicholas, why don't you tell me a little bit about your Highborn Covenant list?
Okay, so this was the first time I'd taken Gorton outside of Searforge. Just because before this, I really only owned just like scores of dwarfs, and I liked playing dwarfs, and so I never had a problem with it. I listened to Chain Attack recently, and they had Gorton under a 4-star list with Chaozee and Boomhowlers, and it just seemed like a list that was a lot of fun to play. I decided I want to make a similar list in Highborn using. In the list, I had Earthbreaker and Sylas and Thor. Who had a Basher Marshal to him. And then I had Max Boomhowlers, Max Nis Hunters, the Arcanist Corps, Rupert to give tough to the Nis, and I had Lanissa. Now, Lanissa was actually kind of a mistake because I had her in the list because before I had the Boomhowlers, I had Forge Guard,
Right.
they really need that extra threat range.
Right.
Whereas, the Nis and the Boomhowlers, not so much. I mean, Boomhowlers can use it, but the Nis are fast, and they never really needed it. I probably could have spent those 2 points on something better, but anyway,
A
'cause she could,
Gorman
anyway.
or a Harlan Versch or something.
Yeah, anything. Yeah, there's a lot of stuff I could have taken that would have been better suited. As it was, though, the list was pretty cool. The theory being that Gorton puts up solid ground, and then you surround him with tough stuff that, when they tough, they're not knocked down because of solid ground. It's a pretty solid strategy. The only problem with that is that Gorton's control area is 10 inches, which is so tiny. So it's
That's what my girlfriend says.
It
Oh, sorry.
just a 10-inch control area, though, it definitely feels really small,
Wow, if your
especially.
girlfriend's saying 10 inches is tiny, that's bad.
So the problem is that with a 10-inch control area, it just it limits how much influence your solid ground can actually have. So, but I guess we'll see how this pans out in the upcoming battle report.
So before we get to the upcoming battle report, one thing I have to ask Nicholas, you marshaled your Basher onto Thor, which seems like an interesting tactical choice. Would you care to justify why exactly you had a marshaled melee warjack on Thor?
Yes. Well, first of all, the Basher slams for free.
Oh, cool.
So it'll always have its free slam instead of a charge, and then it can either boost or it can have another attack or do whatever it wants to do. It's like having two focus instead of one from a regular Jack Marshall. As well, Thor can tune it up so it gets even better. And also with Pronto, it's really fun to have a basher going around, prontoing up to get the perfect angle, and then bashing forward and just killing whatever you want to kill. It really is a great combo. The only problem with it is that if the basher's on Thor, you can't benefit from the strength of Granite because that's battle group only, which is very sad face because there's nothing better than a power 19 basher going around just bashing everything in the face. It's really awesome, especially when you tune it up. Oh man, it can do some serious damage. Three
Interesting.
charges, three focus, and then tune up, and that thing is just destroying whatever it gets near. Again, without the battle group, you can't give it three focus, and you can't give it strength of granite. I mean, obviously, I didn't realize when I made the list that strength of granite was battle group only. Otherwise, I probably would have kept him in the battle group. But the Pronto does allow for some really fun shenanigans, and I think they're both very valid ways to run him.
All right, so as for the table setup, I put out the terrain for today's game, and my goal was to make the table
Sorry,
basically
I thought you said put as many massive forests as you could everywhere.
a. Yes, that was the goal, to put as much blocking and rough terrain on the table, because I don't think either side had Pathfinder for anything except for the Earthbreaker.
I had Nissen and Rupert, so I could give it out if I
Right.
wanted to, but Rupert, of
The
course, was on there.
Outriders have it.
Oh yes, I forgot about the Outriders. Yeah. No. What ended up happening is that this is the first game we played on one of Nick's new tables. He had just recently finished this. It was kind of a combined effort. Nick put in most of the work doing the plywood and the surface, and then Aaron, did some of the help, and then I supplied the grass. So that was my big contribution to this table. But you can see the pictures online, and I gotta be honest, they look pretty good. Nick had built some hills and a couple forests. He's even made tutorials on how he made the forest, so if you're curious, you can check those out. But as a result, because this was the first game we had at this new table, we only had a limited selection of terrain. A couple forests, a couple hills, a few walls, and a house. And so basically, I just threw everything that we had onto the table, and my goal was to make it asymmetrical. So I didn't want there to be a balanced table. I really like when there's a value to choosing to go second so that you can pick a tactically better position for your army.
Yeah, I strongly agree with that sentiment.
But it's tricky to do because you don't want to make it so heavily biased on one side that, you basically give the game to whoever goes second, and correspondingly, you want there to be an advantage. So, anyways, whatever. Basically, what I did is I set up a lot of forests on one side of the table, and then a couple walls in a better position on the other side of the table. So one side would get a little bit of concealment if they're going for the zone, and could theoretically even hide behind the forest and still be, a viable threat in some extent, while the other side would get to have a wall protecting them. And a hill that was a little bit closer to the central zone. We rolled. Oh, we didn't roll. Steamroller 2014, as I'm sure all of you know by now, had just dropped, and we decided that rather than randomly going through them, we would just go through them sequentially. And so we started with number one, which is supply and demand? No,
Destruction.
destruction. The new destruction. Oh my God, is it so much better than the old destruction?
Oh man, the old destruction was awful.
Awful.
To even score the zone once, you had to wait like 3 turns. It was just terrible.
On that note, the last time I played destruction as a scenario, I actually lost by scenario. I was playing against Butcher One, and it just the game ground out for so long that the Butcher had enough time, basically single-handedly, to kill all the objectives on his side and then dominate the zone. But yeah, it took like 6 turns for that game to end, and there was no shortage of death on both sides. So yeah, basically, destruction is a 12 by 6 rectangular zone in the center of the table, and There are two monoliths. Those are objectives. Kitty corner, so your friendly one is on your left side. The enemy one is on the right side, opposite. And they're slightly lower armor, slightly lower hit points than in Steamroller 2013, but they now have sacrificial pawn, which means that if you kill the objective, you can choose... If your enemy kills your objective, you can choose to have one of your models within 3 inches die instead.
Four inches.
Within 4 inches, die instead and keep the monolith alive, which I think is a really neat kind of rule.
It is
interaction.
A very... I love the change. I think it's really interesting.
Yeah.
The fact that you don't have to... You know, you only have to kill one in order to score, but that, you know, it's such a clever way of being able to keep it alive. You know, it really... I don't know. I guess it will require more playtesting, but it seems like a lot more fun.
Yeah. Yeah. So far, I'm impressed with the one time we have done it. Other than that, there aren't any major changes, certainly not for this scenario, from 2013 to 2014. So the deployment zones are still the same size. They still go the whole length of the table. The zones are still 12 by 6 and 12-inch circles, which is nice.
One thing I wanted to bring up was... I noticed one of the changes for this destruction scenario was that they made it so you can't pray the objectives in this. I thought that was interesting they did it for this scenario and not any other scenarios with objectives, though.
Yeah, that's interesting to me. And I don't think in the 2013 that there was that restriction on anything, period.
No, you could pray every objective because it's an enemy model or whatever. So
I don't know. It's weird.
Yeah. So it seems odd to me that they would add that restriction to one scenario but not all of them.
Yeah.
So I don't really know why, but
well.
Yeah.
Well, you would just do it to get a movement buff.
Yeah, that's the only reason. That's kind of, I think, why they made the change, was because people use it as kind of like an exploit to, they pray the objective, they're within 10 inches, and then they can use that as a movement buff, and then they kill the objective, and they switch the prey to what they actually want to kill.
Right.
Yeah. I guess Preptor didn't like people, you know, gaming the system that way, and so they changed it. But I don't understand why they only changed it on one scenario. But yeah. Oh well.
All right. So how'd the initiative roll go?
Dwarfs won.
Oh, nice.
And I chose to go second. The main reason for that was that I am very slow, and I didn't want to have to start at 7 inches off the table edge and have to basically run straight forward both turns in order to get outside of the kill box or inside the kill box, however you reckon it.
Yeah.
I just wanted some flexibility, so I wanted to go second to be 10 inches up so that I could just relax or, you know, get my way out of the kill box in a relaxed manner.
Nice. I should also say that the walls on one side of the board, which would give some cover to the army, would also make it very difficult to move your Earthbreaker straight up the center of the table, because Earthbreakers don't have enough speed that they can actually walk over a wall. They have to either run or charge over it, which I find a kind of an interesting limitation on their movement.
Yeah, I did look at the walls as well, and I didn't necessarily want to have to cross that.
Yeah. So, Aaron, why don't you tell us about your deployment?
It was extremely simple, and I never learn from my lessons, where I go back and say, I'm not going to just do one straight line. And, of course, I didn't follow through, and I did one straight line. However, I did think about stacking the units, so you would have a first and second line unit. The reason that I didn't was based on two things. First, this was the first time that I'd used the Outriders, and I didn't know how they were going to perform.
Right.
I have read pros and cons on how effective they are, and a lot of people said that they just weren't that good. They weren't worth the 10 points. Their sprays weren't that effective. They were really fast, and that's what Kador is definitely lacking, some speedy units. But they weren't that heavy hitting,
right?
So I took that to heart more than the positive reviews of them. And I had intended to use them as a flanking unit, but since I didn't know how well they were going to work on them by themselves, I put the Winter Guard with them.
Right.
Initially, I was going to stack the Winter Guard either in front or behind the commandos, and then they would work in tandem. But I really wanted a backup unit for the Outriders. So basically from my right flank to my left flank, it went the Behemoth, and then Spriggan, and then just behind them was Irisk. Next to them was the Assault Commandos. The Iron Fang Kovnik was just behind them and to their left. Then it was the Wintergard Death Star, and then the Outriders on my far left flank.
Very cool. All right, Nick, what about you?
So for my deployment, I wanted Gordon to be kind of in the middle. I wanted the Earthbreaker to be in the middle in order to be able to get to Aaron's jacks and to be able to get to the objective and also to contest the zone. So the Earthbreaker kind of just had half his base in the forest, because I know he can walk up through the forest with Pathfinder with no issues. And I just want to kind of keep a screen, at least on one side, to keep Gordon safe. So the forest blocks line is set on one side, then he can set up a wall or some Arcanist clouds on the other side to keep him safe. So I had the Earthbreaker and Gordon in the middle. I had the Nis on my left flank, so that because they could just run through the forest, and Rupert was with them, and also Lanissa was with them, just arbitrarily because she had Pathfinder, because she was Pathfinder as well. So I put her in the forest so she can move through it fine. And then on my right flank, I had Thor and the Basher and the tactical Arcanist Corps, and then I had the Boomhallers on the far right. And Silas was hanging out with Gordon.
So, just for future reference, I think it's interesting that you put the Nis, your fragile, high-defense attack team, directly opposite Aaron's Behemoth with its large, powerful AoEs, and the low-defense...
I think you forget that they're Weapon Masters.
Well, yeah, Weapon Masters are fine. If they can actually get up and hit them, it's going to wreck it, but... To me, again, in my ignorance, the Nis would be a better counterpoint to the Wintergard and the Outriders, and the TAC, sorry, not the TAC, the Boomhowlers would be a much better match against the Behemoth. So I find it really interesting that you apparently thought the opposite, which is not to say that
it was a wrong decision. Yeah, no, I completely disagree with you, because the Wintergard will tear the Nis apart, because they get boost attack rolls, they'll kill them all in one turn.
Interesting.
Easily. And the Boomhallers at least can tough against it. Whereas the Boomhallers, they can't even damage the Jack. I mean, what's their swords? Aren't they like power 10 or something? Like
power 12.
They're swords?
Yeah. Yeah, the Boomhallers are power 12.
Okay, but that's still dice minus 9.
Yeah.
Which isn't good.
And they don't weapon master or anything. I don't know.
Oh, no, that's fair.
I completely disagree with your assessment. I think you're completely wrong. So, moving on.
Moving on. All right, Aaron, tell us about turn one.
Kador, turn one. So, I give, and by I mean Irisk. Irisk gives one focus to each of the jacks. And generally, this turn is basically running forward. So the Outriders activate, and they run forward, and they kind of spread out a bit. Some of them are in the forest on the left flank, and some are just kind of as far left as they can go without actually going off the board. The Spriggan and Behemoth, they both run up to the two walls that are, I guess, central on the board, slightly to each side, so that they're not blocked if they want to charge. The Wintergard, they run up behind the forest. Joe moves and gives them tough and fearless. The Iron Fang Kovnik moves and gives the uses a star action shield march on the assault commandos. The commandos move up their 8 inches and shield wall. And Irisk runs up behind the wall just to his left. And that was it. In retrospect, I kind of wish that I had run the assault commandos instead.
Yeah, I was just about to
because
say.
there was no chance of them being shot that turn, and what it really kind of screwed up was the next turn. Well, I guess actually on that turn, all that the Iron Fang Kovnik did was move laterally. He didn't he didn't move forward, and I
Right.
really wanted him because he's a decent solo.
Yeah.
In addition to being having synergy with any unit that has the shield wall capabilities, he has a good unit in his own right with Weapon Master and Reach. So I wanted him to be in the fight when the fight happened because he's
Right.
going to wreck stuff. So in retrospect, I didn't really manage that movement very well. But anyways, that was my first turn.
Cool. Yeah, I agree that you probably should have run them as well.
It's one of those things that most cases, if you're going first with shield wall troops, run them. And if this is a kind of a lecture to both you and Nick, because I know Nick now with his House Guard Thane for his Retribution army falls into the trap of wanting to walk his halberdiers up in shield wall rather than run them first turn. I don't know. I have yet to see a situation where it's sufficiently advantageous not to get those extra 4 inches or
Yeah,
six
I know.
inches.
It definitely depends on the list. I mean, if you're against a really long range shooting list, getting up 11 inches versus running up, I think the House Guard can run up. They can run 14 inches with a thing. It's just it's an extra 3 inches, but it's 4 less armor. So I think the trade-off is it's tough to judge when you're up against a really shooty list. If you're against a melee list, yeah, it's a no-brainer. They're not going to get to you, so you should might as well run. Okay, yeah. So we're talking about stuff not related to Valor Parts. Okay. So mercenaries turn one, give a focus to the Earthbreaker. Rupert moves up into the forest and gives tough to the Nis. The Earthbreaker runs forward as far as it can. Just in, it kind of just gets yeah, just to, on the edge of the forest, so blocking line of sight from the whole left side of the board. The Nis run forward and kind of spread out just in the zone around the objectives. The TAC runs forward. Thor prontos the Basher, and then moves up behind the Earthbreaker. The boom howlers get super tough, and then they just kind of spread out on my right flank as much as they can. I have a feeling that they're gonna take some serious damage from those outriders and all the sprays, but I figure with super tough, I'll at least probably save a bunch of them. So then Gorton moves up, and he puts strength of granite on the Earthbreaker, and then solid ground on himself. Now, when I move the Nis Hunters, I kind of spread them out a bit too much, and so there's barely any that are actually in Gorton's control area, which is kind of unfortunate because that's one of the reasons why you take them with him. But oh well. Lanissa runs up just through the forest, trying to stay far enough back that Aaron's long-range shooting jacks won't have line of sight to her. Silas moves up into the forest because he's really only there for upkeeps. And then the Basher also just moves up to position a bit. And that's my turn.
Kador, turn two. So, Iris gives two focus to Behemoth, and he allots those two to his subcortex, and he gives two to Spriggan. The Outriders activate first again, and they move into position to get as many sprays off as they can. Well, they can only get five sprays off, but into position where they're going to hit as many models with each spray as they can. So, the first one moves, and he is able to spray three. The second, three also. The third will only get two. The fourth will get two, and the fifth will get three as well.
So that is a respectable amount of attack rolls for five models.
That's a lot of attack rolls.
But
Thank God this isn't a very good unit, eh, Kator Forums?
Well,
That'd be nice.
here's the thing. It wasn't as effective as it could be because of super tough. But with that said, the first attack that hit three kills one, misses one, and hits what's the UA?
Gregor.
Gregor, and hits him for two damage, which is good. The second spray, which hits three, misses two, kills one, but that one toughs. The third spray that was hitting two misses one and kills one and fails to tough. The fourth that was spraying two fails to wound, but hit. And the second one would have been hitting Gregor, but it misses. So that was unfortunate. And the fifth one that was hitting three as well misses one Hits and kills one, but it toughs, and hits and kills another, and doesn't tough. So fairly good,
Yeah,
but
that's not bad at all.
it wasn't bad. But I knew, because of super tough right off the bat. I mean, 50-50 that they could tough. And going off of the last two times I've seen this unit played, the tough rolls just caused aneurysms all around. So I was expecting it. I was going into the fight prepared for it. But they performed pretty well. So they use their light cavalry move to move 5 inches back, two back into the forest, or I think three back in the forest, and then two just kind of out of the way. The Spriggan moves and takes two shots against the Nis hunters using the grenade launchers. One misses, but the deviation kills one, and the second shot misses and scatters wide and doesn't hit anything. Iris moves up and he casts Iron Flesh on the commandos, and just because he could and he was within range, he shoots at a Nis and but he misses. The behemoth fires on the Nis and needs 11s to hit, boosts the hit roll, but misses and it deviates
RAV4 is
wide.
super impressive.
So that was the first shot. His second shot, he fires again at the Nis and boosts a hit. And a hit Nis, I think the AoE only affected just the one that hit. Unfortunately, that Nis toughs. So, not the greatest round of shooting in the world.
Wow, that's okay.
But I did want to try to kill some of those because even though the Jacks were both armor 21, I was really nervous about getting multiple units around them that had Weapon Master, even if those weapons were only power 9. That damage can add up after a while. So I think I may have been within range of the Earthbreaker, but I was more nervous about the Nis. So that was that rationale. Anyways, the Iron Fang Kovnik moves and he gives Shield March to the Assault Commandos again. The commandos move forward 7 inches and they shield wall. And they make as many range attacks as they can for the Nis that are within range. I think I only killed one Nis, one boom howler.
One assault commando killed a Nis, and then one flamethrower killed a boom howler.
And then one put one damage on Earthbreaker. And
And
then,
that took a nice roll.
yeah, that was a
Dice
crazy
minus
roll.
nine.
Yeah, so there's a slight, like, weird paint chip where the bullet hit. That's at one point.
Scratch
And one of them managed to kill a boom howler, but that boom howler toughed. So,
that.
again, this was actually a worse use of the Iron Fang Kovnik this turn than it was last turn. Because at least last turn, the IFK moved forward. This time, all it did was move laterally. So, again, not great.
Well, first time ever using the model, you're allowed to have some learning curve.
Well, what really happened with that the solo was that I really wanted to use the Shield March order. Like I was so giddy to use it. And that was unfortunately to the detriment of using the unit like I should have been using it, which is moving it not like an idiot. If you look at the pictures on combosmite.com, halfway down on during this turn, you can see how out in the open, in the middle of nowhere, the IFK actually is at the end of this turn.
Yeah, he's very much by himself.
Anyway, let's continue.
Lonely, so lonely. Sorry, keep going.
Well, he had bad BO that day. What are you gonna do? So Kovnik Joe activates, and he gives the Winter Guard boosted attack rolls. And he advances forward. The Winter Guard receive a bob and weave order, and they move up around the forest. They fire on the boom howlers, and unfortunately, the one that hit toughs both times. One of the rocketeers fires at Gregor, but misses, and the deviation fails to wound. And the other Rocketeer fires at one of the Arcanists and hits and kills it, which was nice.
Nice.
Happy day for you.
Well, we'll talk about the placement, my placement of the Winter Guard at the end, but I kind of felt like I could have placed them a little bit better, but I was sort of working around that forest.
Yeah,
But we'll discuss it later.
they were a little blocked out, yeah.
Yeah, but again,
So
we'll discuss that at a later date, at a later juncture, as it were.
so the tough tally for that turn was with two tough units on the board, there was a lot of tough rolls going on. I passed six tough rolls and I failed five. So I was actually ahead of the curve because I should have been about 50-50 with the Boomhowlers and I should have been about a third with the Nis, and so I was doing pretty well.
Yeah, you lucked out. So, turn ends.
Okay, mercenaries, turn two. This turn, I give two focus to the Earthbreaker. He goes, and I upkeep both my spells, the Strength of Granite and Solid Ground. So the Earthbreaker moves up and just toes into the zone. I fire the right knockdown torpedo at the objective, and it knocks down the four assault commandos and including one flamethrower who are standing all around it. I boost damage on the objective. I do eight damage, and one assault commando dies from the blast. I use the shots from my nipple guns to kill. Oh no, I shoot an assault commando, but I
Can we
miss.
start calling them TD cannons?
You can call them that.
Oh boy.
The left knockdown torpedo, I fire into a clump of assault commandos, and I end up hitting, and I knock down six of them, which
Oh.
was just awesome.
Wow.
The directly hit guy gets killed. The rest, I fail the wound, I believe. And then my left nipple gun, I kill the knockdown flamethrower, which is awesome because it's good to kill them from range. Because they set everything on fire, as it was he was only close enough to set the Spriggan on fire, which isn't that big a deal because it's probably not going to hurt him. But yeah, and initially Aaron was under the impression that it was everything within 5 inches got lit on fire, which would have included Irisk, which would have been really bad.
Oh yeah.
But we read the card again and corrected ourselves. It's just a 5-inch AoE.
Which is still pretty impressive.
Oh, it's effective. It lets stuff on fire, so that's good. After I've finished my Earthbreaker activation, I realize, oh, I forgot to activate Thor first. So instead, this turn, Thor moves up. He prontos the Basher into position for a slam, and he gives him boosted damage rolls. After which, the Basher slams into an Outrider. I use the Jack Marshall boost to boost the hit, and I make it. And that Outrider slammed into another Outrider. Because of the Grand Slam, you get your minimum 2 inches plus your D6, which is awesome. The Outrider is only about 1/2 inch away, so he hit him. So the one I slammed got the super slam damage. Yeah, he got the super slam damage from hitting another model and died. And the other guy, I was hitting with at dice damage, so the other guy also. I rolled a high enough on two dice to kill him as well.
I think at this point Aaron didn't actually realize that his cavalry have wounds, but I you rolled enough. You rolled
But
high enough to kill it anyways.
he was rolling at dice, and I think the first roll you rolled like,
It was 46.
yeah.
yeah, it was a lot. So there was no way it was.
And the
The
second was just
second
two.
one was pretty high too.
Yeah, it was 2d6, and I think I rolled like an eight or something, so
Yeah.
it was enough to kill you.
You rolled at least a five, so that's
Yeah,
all you
definitely.
needed.
Yeah. Next up, he did his flak field, and I think there was only one assault commando in range, and it failed to wound him. So that was it for him. Next up, the TAC moved up, and one of them did a flame burst on the objective, but it failed to wound it, and so the other one just kind of popped some smoke in order to block line of sight to Gordon and Thor. Next up, the Boomhowlers activate. I give them super tough again. And the two that were knocked down, they sack their action to move, and then the unit just kind of moves up, and I have them fire on Outriders, which was probably a bad idea because I didn't realize at the time that Boomhauer grunts are only rat four, and
Yeah.
so Outriders they always have concealment, so against range their defense 15, so I need 11 to hit them. So after the first shot, I probably should have cut my losses, but it was too late because I already moved them. And yeah, so they obviously didn't get anything done that turn. On the other side of the board, the Nis charge in, and I get two on the Spriggan, and I get three charge various assault commandos, and the other ones just kind of run. On the Spriggan, one of them misses its attack roll, of course, on defense 10.
Sheesh.
I know, right? And the other one hits, but he fails to wound because, power 9 on armor 21 is hard, even with Weapon Masters. The three that charge the assault commandos, they charge the ones that were knocked down by the Earthbreaker, so they all auto hit. And with Weapon Masters on power on armor 18, they kill all three. So that was nice. And the other ones just kind of run up behind a position in different ways. Sylana runs up just to make sure everyone's in command. And next up, Rupert moves up and he gives tough to the Nis again. Lanissa moves up to the edge of the forest, and then she does her ice bolt on the objective and does 6 damage, leaving it with just one box.
Oh.
Yeah, that was sad. Although at the time I didn't realize that he could just sack on it anyway. But
Right.
yeah, and Gorton moves up. He puts his rock wall down in front of the Earthbreaker to protect it from charges. And then Silas just kind of moves up in the forest to stay safe. And yeah, no tough rolls on this turn. So.
So, if you had to do it all over again, would you have charged the boom howlers instead of shooting?
I don't even know. Like I didn't really have much I could do with them because I had two guys that were knocked down. So the best I could do with them was just maybe to run to engage or something. But that doesn't stop the outriders because they just spray over you anyway.
Right.
So I don't actually know what I could have done differently on that turn. Maybe what I could have done is just have them fall back. I don't know. I just don't know what would have been better because they're just getting kind of torn apart by the sprays.
Right.
Kador, turn 3. So I roll for the continuous fire on Spriggan, which he's still on fire, but it doesn't do any damage, which is good.
Stunning
And
that.
that's predictable.
Dice
Yeah.
minus 9.
So Iris gives 1 focus to Spriggan and gives 2 to Behemoth, which he allots to his subcortex again. And he uses 1 to upkeep Iron Flesh on the commandos. The Outriders move up again and they sort of move into position again, like they did last time, to affect as many of the boom howlers with their sprays as they can. There's only 3 left this time. The first attack hits 3 boom howlers. One boom howler dies, fails to tough. Another boom howler dies, but he toughs, and the last attack would hit Gregor, but it misses. The second outrider only hits 2. He hits a boom howler and kills it because it fails to tough, and also hits Gregor for 2 damage. The third one hits one howler and Gregor. Kills the boom howler, but the howler toughs and manages to kill Gregor. So no more
Which
super
is
tough.
sad face.
Yeah.
No. It's not actually called super tough, is it?
No, it's.
No, there's nothing called. Yeah, there's no game mechanic called super tough. That's just the
Yeah, it's
slang.
called Call of
Okay.
Defiance, and it just means tough on 4+ instead of 5+.
Okay, so each character that has that ability, it's a different name.
As far as I know, yes.
Yeah, it could
Okay.
be.
I think there's only two. I think only Gregor and one other troll unit, which is also a fell color, can give super tough. I don't think there's anything else in the game that gets 4+ toughs.
Well, I mean, there's Iris's feet.
Yeah, other
Oh
than
yeah, of course,
the
Irisk. Duh.
Stick
Stick
So,
around for that.
yeah.
it's coming up. Don't touch that dial. So, their 5-inch follow-up move, they move to their left flank with the intent to kind of overtake the Nick's right flank as it falls. Which is kind of what I should have done the first time instead of moving the units back into the forest, but whatever.
Yeah, I think you're probably
Joe
right about that.
activates. What?
I think you're right about that. Anyway,
Yeah.
we'll move on.
Anyways. Joe activates and he gives boosted attack rolls to the Winter Guard. He moves and fires on one of the boom howlers, but the boom howler toughs, so knockdown. The Winter Guard move kind of around the left, the right, and within the forest to get as many attacks off as I can. I take six shots at one boom howler, which finally fails after five tough rolls.
Very
So
nice.
don't want to say wasted shots because it did die, but there was nothing else in range of
See,
them,
now I'm
so.
sad I didn't see that turn because I wanted to know if that's the same boom howler that passed all eight against Nick. Because if it was the same
Well,
model, like, that guy's now my
yeah, that's kind of
vanguard.
weird. Have you marked it yet, like with the etching or whatever?
No, I'm going to tattoo an eight on him for the eight toughs he passed.
I can tell you which guy it was if you really want to know.
Well, tell me after when we're not recording because I don't think anyone else
Okay.
cares, but
Okay.
I care.
Yes, I know you care.
So yeah, six shots on the boom howl eventually kills it. Then I do a three-man CRA on the Arcanist Core, but only managed to do two damage,
Ouch.
which I wasn't happy about, but what are you going to do? One of the Rocketeers fires at the Earthbreaker, but doesn't do enough damage to wound it, and that was it for them. Because most of them couldn't move far enough to get within range of anything. The Commandos activate. The ones that have been knocked down stand up. They'll do their actions instead of move because the Nyss are right in their face, so what are they going to do? One, I guess, that wasn't engaged shoots and kills a boom howler. One attacks a Nyss but misses. Another shot attacks a Nyss and also misses. And one melees a Nyss, and I guess two melee a Nyss, and that Nyss toughs both times.
No, you have two melee attacks.
Oh, that's right. I don't even know my own cards.
Ha.
Yeah, so between the shield attack and the sword attack, both of those killed, but both toughed. So irritating. Iorisk activates, and he casts superiority on Spriggan. And pops his feet, which I should have done before I attacked with the commandos. But we'll go over that later.
But now you know.
Now I know. And just because he can, he shoots at a Nyss, but he misses.
Huh.
I think he actually rolled Snake Eyes.
Ouch.
A lot of times.
So
Even
he's.
with the feet.
I know.
I'm
So,
not sure that
Spriggan.
Iorisk is affected by his own feet. Because I don't think he's a warrior model. But it.
He is.
Oh,
Yeah.
he is? Okay.
Warcaster's a warrior model.
Okay, anyways, keep going.
Well, yeah, unless it. Here on. Unless the.
It would have to specify non-Warcaster.
No, it does not. It just says
Yeah,
warriors.
just yeah, friendly faction warrior
Yep.
models. So unless it said not, I don't know why I would say, but not non-Warcaster, non-Warlock models,
Yep.
or Warcaster Warlock models. Anyways, so Spriggan activates and he tramples through three Nyss to get to my objective, and unfortunately, all three of those Nyss tough.
I'm okay
Ouch.
with this.
Really irritating. Oh God, it was so irritating. Because part of the reason that I was feeling okay over on that side was because I had the two jacks that were basically running pick for Iorisk. And now he left with my intention to kill the units that were kind of the threat on that side, and they're all fine.
Right.
I mean, knocked down, but they're not dead.
Yeah.
Ugh.
Yeah, I love
You'd think that
it.
getting run over, like trampled by a gigantic metal thing, would probably kill you. Or at least you'd like throw out a hamstring or break an ankle or something. That'd be fun.
Throw it a hamstring. I'm
Anyway.
just picturing the Nyss like on the floor being like, "Time out, coach, time out."
Yeah, eyelash in the eye. The Iron Fang Kovnek finally gets in the game. He charges a Nyss, kills it, and that Nyss
It
stops. The Behemoth kind of shimmies to his left to block any charge lanes to Iorisk and any possible shots to Iorisk. And he fires on Earthbreaker using both of his shots. And did I boost the hit or damage?
You boost the damage roll
Yeah, no one
twice.
boosts a hit in Earthbreaker. The defense eight.
Defense
No,
eight.
I mean, with my rolls, who knows?
Even the behemoth hits on four.
Yeah.
Yeah. So boost the damage, and I do between the two shots, I do 15 damage total.
That's pretty
Yeah, which
respectable.
is pretty. It was very respectable.
Yeah.
It did a lot of damage.
Yeah.
Nothing
So
crippled,
that was.
though.
Oh, I mean, so 16 total with the Rocketeer. So
That one ping.
Yeah.
super
Don't
disappointing.
forget that rocket.
That wasn't a
Yeah.
rocket, it was a gun.
Oh, that's
It
right.
was one of the AKs just shooting, because I
Yeah.
remember having this discussion while I was happening. I was Your odds of hitting the NIST, you had to roll a 12, and your odds of damaging the Earthbreaker, you only had to roll a 10. So.
Yeah. Well, I think probably what happened is the commando who damaged the Earthbreaker named his gun Earthbreaker Breaker.
Yeah,
Didn't decide.
you can't argue with the name.
That's awesome.
No, not at all.
So the tough
It is
tally
big.
for this turn was astronomical. For those not keeping track, I passed 15 tough rolls this turn and failed five. That is completely bonkers. Considering the Nyss were only five up tough, the Boonhellers were four up, but still, like, I was way, like, just I had no business making that many tough rolls. It felt amazing.
Yes. Very little business.
Aaron was nearly livid.
If he hadn't had his heart ripped out and replaced by a steam pump many, many mo moons ago, it would have been crushed. All right.
That was a lot of tough. Okay, so now mercenaries turn three. Again, I upkeep Strength of Granite and Solid Ground. At this point, I'm thinking, why am I upkeeping Strength of Granite on the Earthbreaker? He seems like he's never going to get into melee, but you never know. It's better than spending two focus on the turn I need to give to assign focus. So, then I give two focus to the Earthbreaker. Lanissa shoots the objective and kills it, and then Aaron sacks an assault commando to save it. Thor moves up to within 9 inches of the Basher, and then, surprise, surprise, fails his check for the
Womp
Pronto. So
womp.
instead, he just instead he all he tunes up the Earthbreaker's damage rolls. Next up, the last remaining Boomhauler shoots the objective, kills it again, and then Aaron sacks a Winter Guard that's nearby to save it. Next, the Basher. It moves away from an Outrider, taking a free strike and six damage. Although, looking at the pictures now, that Outrider was probably out of command range. But anyway, done is done. So then, yeah, it moves away, takes the damage, and it goes base to base with two Winter Guard, and it flak fields. So it kills the two Winter Guard and the Assault Commando, but of course, they all tough from Irisk's feet. Next up, the Earthbreaker moves up into the zone a little bit. Its right torpedo kills the objective again, and it also the blast kills a Winter Guard and an Assault Commando. And I guess, Aaron, you chose not to sack it this time, I think, because
Yeah, no, I
there was
didn't.
one guy still within range, I believe, but you chose not to sack.
Yeah, I figured it wasn't worth losing the units for.
You're probably right. I don't know. Anyway, the right nipple gun fires on the flamethrower. Who gets hit? I think he's knocked down now, so he gets hit, and he lights one winter guard or one winter guard nearby on fire.
If he was knocked down, he wasn't supposed to be, but that's okay. We can keep going.
Oh, you're right. I think he just hit him legit. Anyway, next the Earthbreaker fires on the Outrider. He boosts a hit and he kills him. And then I shoot at the Rocketeer and I miss him. The left torpedo hits and knocks down the behemoth, but it doesn't do any damage. But it does kill the Kovnik, the Armfang Kovnik, but he duffs.
Ooh. Well, that's lucky.
Yeah. Now the left nipple guns shoot at the Armfang Kovnik again, and actually manage to kill him. He fails his tough roll, and then I fire at an assault commando, and he misses.
Not so
Because
lucky anymore.
they're at like defense 15 from Iron Flesh, so can't do much about that. The Nyss then activate. One of them sacks his one of them knockdown ones sacks his action and just moves to block the Spriggan out of the zone. Just kind of moves in between it and the objective. And then three of them sack their movement to stand. And I believe they're all unengaged. Two of the Nyss are engaged, and they attack AKs, but they both miss.
The Nyss that are engaged, two of them attack assault commandos, but both miss.
Okay.
One of them kills,
Okay, and but then
but
he
it
toughs, okay.
toughs.
And one attacks his Spriggan and fails to wound.
Right.
Yeah, there we go. Okay. English is hard.
Yeah.
And then yeah, there's three of them that are unengaged, and they do a three-man CRA with Sylenna on Irisk. And so I need a 9 to hit him because he's behind cover. And I roll an 8, so it misses. Boo-hoo.
Thank God.
Yeah,
Yeah.
I mean, power 13, that would be bad.
Yeah, dice minus three, that's respectable.
Yeah, and then Rupert moves up, and then he gives Tuft to the Nis again. And Silas just kind of moves around the forest as well. Gorton moves up behind the Earthbreaker and puts out the rock wall in front again to prevent his baby from dying, hopefully. And then the TAC moves out, moves around and puts up some smoke to try to protect Thor and Gorton. Although it's questionable if it's going to be effective. And at the end of the turn, I score a point for killing the objective. The tough tally for this turn, not nearly as impressive as my turn. Aaron passed 5 tough rolls and failed 4. So he was right on, you know, on the average for what he should have been
Yeah.
rolling for his tough rolls. 50-50, approximately. So that's the end of the mercenary's turn 3.
Kador, turn 4. So the right off the top, I have to roll for the continuous of fire. Continuous of what? Am I Irish? Jesus. Continuous fire.
Use
Yeah, I was subtly Japanese for a second.
that.
So there's one Winter Guard unit, or one Winter Guard model, rather, and the Spriggan. The fire on the Winter Guard goes out,
Oof.
and the fire on the Spriggan remains, but it doesn't do any damage again.
Yeah, he rolled those dice backwards, apparently.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It was supposed to go the other way. Oh well.
So, Irisk drops Iron Flesh. He gives 3 to Behemoth and 3 to Spriggan. And using one of the 3 that I gave to Behemoth, he shakes Knockdown. The Outriders, they move right into enemy territory and almost behind the Arcanists. They fire on Thor using their sprays and they kill Thor.
Nice.
And the other one fires the spray at the Boomhowler but fails to wound it. And then using their follow-up move, I move on to the hill on Nick's right flank. What's left of the commandos charge the Nis, and they manage to kill all 3 of them.
Nice.
Covenant Joe activates and gives boosted attack rolls to the Winter Guard and fires on the remaining Boomhowler but misses. The Winter Guard move up the board. 2 of them do a CMA on the Basher and it hit it for a colossal 1 damage.
That seems to be the theme for today. Hit the war jacks for single points.
Yeah.
Well, hey, you were 1 point from crippling his H, which I don't know if it actually does anything, but
Was that head?
Yeah.
Yeah, I think so. I think that actually would affect his damage rolls, his
Yeah,
attacking
that
damage.
sounds like probably. Both of the rockets fire on Earthbreaker and do a combined total of 7 damage.
It's respectable.
Luckily, it was the side of the Earthbreaker that hadn't been decimated by Behemoth. Luckily
Yeah,
for me,
well,
not
for you, not for me.
you.
One fires at the Boomhowler, which kills it, and the Boomhowler toughs. And one fires again at the Boomhowler and finally manages to kill it. I think that was the last Boomhowler.
Yeah, that was the last one. Poor Boomhowlers.
And one fires at the one tact or the one Arcanist that he can see through the cloud, but fails to kill it. Irisk shoots at a Nis just because he can, kills it, and that Nis
Oh.
toughs. He buys a second shot with the one focus he has left, kills the same Nis, and the Nis
Oh, that's just rude.
Yeah,
He
not
finally
a
hit
fan.
something.
Oh, God damn it. So Spriggan, who is standing just about directly next to, but not quite in base to base with the objective,
attacks the objective and hits it for 13 damage, and then attacks with a shield and manages to kill it. And Nick declines from sacking anyone to prevent that. So he buys a second attack on the Nis that's to his left, I believe, but misses. I guess he buys another attack on another miss and on the same Nis and manages to kill it and it doesn't tough.
So you gave three focus to
Awkward.
this brigand. It gets two initial attacks. The
But
initial.
the two initial attacks kill the objective.
Yeah.
So I buy an attack on the Nis, which
You
misses.
buy another attack on
I
a
buy another
Nis.
one that kills it,
Yeah.
and then I buy a third that misses the other
You
Nis.
got
Okay.
it.
Yes. Yeah.
It was just the notes say buys attacks on Nis, miss, kills, misses.
Right.
So it's.
Yeah, there we go.
Yeah.
Yeah. My notes are awesome.
So I managed to kill one
I
of the
love the fact
Nis.
that we're doing this report by committee. So what do you think happened, Aaron? No, I don't think that's what happened. I think this is what
Yeah.
happened.
Well, we need a gavel. And
Maybe Mark can
then.
exercise his powers of editing this time and make this report a little less nonsense.
Yeah.
So Spriggan finishes. And he's left with that one dick bag of a Nis, ain't I?
That's all of them, actually.
It really, yeah, you're right. It really is. Really. Behemoth fires twice at Earthbreaker and hits both shots and boosts both shots and does another 13 damage total.
That's really solid, man.
Which is great, except that there was only four boxes left
And
and
one
I
of them was
needed
the
those
L.
Oh, that's brutal.
gun was gone. So he was still a threat on that side, which was unfortunate.
No argument.
During this turn, it was a long turn because there was a lot of inner turmoil because I really, really, really wanted Behemoth to charge the Earthbreaker. I wanted to get those two, well, I guess in this case it could have been three. Or four rather, armor piercing fists out. I
Yeah, hell
really
yeah.
want it.
Yeah, that would
The
do some
problem
serious damage.
Nick, since he doesn't have reach, I have to get right within that half inch melee range, and Nick had put that wall there, and if I went up to the wall, he was too far away, and I didn't know if I had the distance to charge to the side of the wall and still be within his melee range. If I failed it, that's Behemoth.
Yeah.
That's current form right there. Because the next turn he's just going to get destroyed. And I just I it wasn't worth risking it because I just wasn't sure if he was going to be able to make it. Even if he had superiority cast on him, I still didn't think he was going to make it.
Yeah. I mean, if it makes you feel any better, I'd put that wall exactly where it was to prevent exactly that from happening,
Well,
so.
no. I know. It's not like you did it willy-nilly. You just happened to.
I'll just put a wall somewhere.
I just dropped it and I was like, oh, you know what? Might as well spend the focus.
Threw it in the air, it hit the lamp, and went right back. So with that, I ended my turn, and the tough tally this time was not as good as it has been before.
No, definitely not.
Three passed, but five failed.
Yeah. So I mean, but you know what? I'll take a turn of that when I had a turn of 15-5. That was just crazy.
Yeah.
Crazy. Anyway. Okay, so Merc's turn 4. So yeah, I dropped Solid Ground because most of my tough troops are dead now anyway. I upkeep Strength of Granite because I don't know, oh, because I have Silas, so he just does it. First thing I do is the Basher. What I'm seeing is that the only thing in the zone right now is one remaining assault commando, so I'd really like to kill him to just kind of get myself some more control points. So the Basher, I think I can manage it with the Basher. The Basher flak fields, which kills both Winogrand that are engaging him, and then he walks over into the zone and he attacks the assault commando, which is still there. Defense 12, needing 6 to hit. He gets it and he kills him. So that was good. So now I've cleared the zone. So now I can just kind of enjoy the rest of my turn. My Nis, a couple of them, a couple the knockdown ones all stand up. One of them's they They sack their movement so they can fire. And three of them are engaged, and they do another CRA from Silena on Iris, needing a 9 to hit, and again I roll an 8. So, boo. Anyway. And the last guy who's engaged, who's engaging this brigand, just swings at him and fails to wound, not too unpredictably. So Rupert moves up and gives them tough again. And then Lanissa moves up and fires on another assault commando just because, and she actually misses him, which is too bad. And Silas moves around to the forest, and then I activate the Earthbreaker, and I just kind of realized, looking at the board, that I'm totally within 14 inches of Iris. So I move him up as far as I can into the zone, and my brain is kind of fried at this point. It's been a long game, and I draw my line of sight so that I'm centered on an assault commando, on Behemoth, and on Irisk. So both sides of my Colossal are in line to all three of them. But for some reason, I decide to fire my first torpedo on the Behemoth to knock him down, even though I can already see Irisk. So really, it was kind of stupid of me. I don't know why I did it, but anyway. So I fire the Behemoth. I hit him. It knocks him down, but there's no damage. And I actually, there was one of my Nis was within the blast ratio, but he toughs. It was great. I tough on my own turn. After that I use my right torpedo and then I fire on Irisk, boosting the hit roll. I think I need a it ignores cover, so it's on his base 15. Defensive 15, so I need a 10 to hit. Yeah. So I boost the hit and I hit him, knock him down, and I boost the damage roll and it does like 11 damage, so he's like already half in the dirt. My initial attack, I think I roll 4 total nipple gun shots on both sides. The first one fires. I boost the hit just because I have the focus. And I don't. Never mind. He's defense 9. I'm rat 5. So it's 4 to hit. So I roll it and I hit him, boost the damage, and kill Irisk. Victory to mercenaries.
Nicely done.
Yay.
So, at a quick estimate, we'll have to double check and put the numbers on the website afterwards, but I think, Nick, that you ended up getting 25 tough rolls and failed 15.
That sounds about right.
And so this means for the entire game, there were something like 30 successful tough rolls and 20 failed tough rolls. So 50 attempts, guys. And you passed more than half of them. That's crazy.
Yeah, this was a crazy, crazy game for tough rolls. I mean, because we both brought lists that kind of were at least partially designed to exploit that. Yep. I had Rupert to give tough to my Nis, and I had the super tough Boomhowlers and Gorton's solid ground. The whole list was kind of designed around annoying people by toughing and then not being knocked down. Although it didn't actually play out that way, but we can get to that later.
All right, well, let's move on to the ratings. Here we go. We will start with the mercenaries. So, Nick, how do you feel about your... do we always do tactics first?
No, we do feet first.
How do you feel about...
Maybe you forgot because I didn't use it.
So how do you feel about your use of Gorton's feet this turn, this game?
Well, you know, it was weird. I love Gorton's feet. It's an amazing feat. It's so versatile, you know what I mean? It's like an assassination tool, it's an attrition tool, it's a scenario tool. You can just do everything with it. It is such an amazing feat. That said, I mean, I just didn't really have an opportunity this game that I felt it was necessary. I was kind of holding on to it for the assassination because with an Earthbreaker, you put -3 defense on a caster and then you pull him into open ground so he loses his cover or something like that. And it's a dead caster. So I was kind of holding on to it until I can get to the point where I can get Gorton in range and then, do like the St. Louis shuffle and, push everything to the side and then get Iris all by himself and then, rain fire on him from the Earthbreaker and everything. Right. The opportunity just never, it didn't come up in this game. It doesn't happen in every game. I mean, sometimes you just can't get Gorton close enough. It was that forest. It's my own doing. I mean, I put my guys on that edge of the forest in order to block access from half the board.
Right.
And that way it would be easier to protect him. But it also made it so that I couldn't get over to that side of the board for offensive reasons either. So, So I didn't have, really have a chance to use it. But as it turns out, I didn't really need it. So I don't really actually know what kind of score that should get.
I think it lands you, in my opinion, a solid one. Not because of poor feat use, which would be, maybe a zero, but maybe we should do it the other way around. Maybe it's a zero because you just didn't use the feat.
I mean, it could be. I mean, I guess if you don't use it, how can you get a rating for it, right? But yeah, it's just the fact that I just didn't see an opportunity to use it. I mean, now looking back on the game, there are places where I could have used it to benefit myself, but it's just it's such a powerful tool to have in your back pocket in case where if the game had gone a couple more turns, and then I wouldn't have really needed it. You know what I mean? Whereas at this point in the game, at the point where it ended, it wasn't necessary.
What about you, Aaron? Do you think there was any point where Nick should have used his feet and failed to do so?
I would say his score is like non-applicable. Not so much, yes, because he didn't use it, but there wasn't really a point where it's like there was a very obvious, juicy opportunity where he could have used it. I mean, the closest unit to him on his last turn were the Outriders and Spriggan. Now, if he went closer to Spriggan, he's only moving, what, 2.5 inches? Because you were right by the forest. So it would only affect Spriggan. If he moved towards his right flank, it would probably only be affecting the Outriders and maybe one or two Winter Guard. I mean, that's not really worth that feat.
No, I agree.
A zero kind of would indicate that he used it badly. A three would be like a meh. But since he didn't use it, like I don't feel like we can even score it.
I'm still going to push for a one only because I think that if you had really wanted to, there was probably an opportunity you could use Gorton's feet to pull in either the Behemoth or the Spriggan directly into the Earthbreaker and have taken it out, with minimal risk to either Gorton
Well, I
or
mean,
the rest of
I
your
don't
army.
think so.
That's
I
that.
really don't think so.
Okay.
Yeah, no, Aaron's right. I mean, they were just too far away. I couldn't. I never was within 12 inches of them, and I couldn't get closer to them because their forest was there in the way. I mean, I could move the Earthbreaker up first and then pull them in,
But that
but
doesn't make
then
any
I've already
sense.
done my Earthbreaker, right? So, yeah, I didn't have an opportunity
All right, fair
in this
enough.
game.
We will officially make it our first not applicable. Congratulations.
Ha
All right, Aaron, how did you feel about Nick's tactical performance?
Maybe a three. The Nis, I do agree with Nick that putting the Nis against the Jax, even though on paper that seems kind of idiotic, was the better play, just because of what I said off the top of the game, that they're weapon masters and they're not high powered weapons, but if you get a lot of attacks off with those weapon masters, they're going to add up to either a crippled system or a completely wrecked Jack. The Boom Howlers, I think they could have been played differently. It is a bit difficult to say just because they didn't die, sure, that's good, but they were knocked down, so maybe I mean, they weren't going to get into melee, those knocked down guys, and on the turns that maybe they could have gotten into melee, it would have been the one or two who hadn't toughed or hadn't been attacked. Because they were up against guys that had against their what's their rat five?
Four.
Really?
It's bad. Yeah, it's bad.
Okay, so yeah, shooting they're not going to hit anything even
Nope.
against the Winter Guard who were defense
14.
13, and definitely not the ones that are in the forest, and almost certainly not going to hit the Outriders, even the ones out in the open. They did tar, and I don't even think they really tar pitted that well either. Because by the end of the game, I still had managed to basically collapse that whole flank and move right into almost your rear.
Yeah, no, I would say like I definitely deserve a failing grade for whatever I did with the Boom Howlers. I couldn't tell you what would have been a better play. I really don't know. The only thing I can really think of that I might have done differently was that on turn two, when I'd only lost three on your turn two, and I had two knocked down. I might have, instead of doing super tough again, I might have done the stand up call to make them just stand up, and then I could have charged with my remaining unit, which was about seven guys, and then I would have gotten at least
probably four, maybe five of them into combat with the Outriders, and I could have taken some out. I just don't know for sure.
Yeah,
you know, like if I would have had range, because they were in the forest and Moonhunters don't have reach. So forests suck for non-reach infantry.
Yes, they do.
With no Pathfinder. So you know, I just I don't know if there's anything I could have done better. It might just be a case of a bad matchup. You know, like his scissors cut my paper kind of thing. I definitely, you know, the Boomhowlers achieved absolutely nothing this game.
Yeah. Oh, fair enough. I, from watching the game and from hearing about it, I'm okay with giving you a tactics 4 for this. I think you really identified your core issues, which you had to do. Like, you made sure you kept the wall up to protect the Earthbreaker. You were firing the torpedoes where they needed to go and knocking down huge swaths of Aaron's army every turn. And having your troops, you know, even if they survive the attack, you know, on their butts and having to give up either moves or attacks, as you both now know, you know, it kind of sucks. It really limits your options. Now, you're lucky, Aaron is lucky, that instead of Nis, you didn't take Forge Guard that have reach, because then they could just be sitting at 2 inches, and even if they don't kill the AKs, there's nothing you can do. You stand up and you either can't attack, or you stand up and you have to move in. It's a sucky situation. So I think you really, it wasn't a brilliant tactical game. You did make enough mistakes to knock you down to a 5, from a 5. But I think it was solid. I think you basically, you know, identified where you had to be, and you made sure that the right support and the right tactics and the right troops were there where they were. That stated, I think that you made an interesting but not very good list. I don't know if that really ties into tactics overall, though, because...
It does.
Well, basically, the Boomhowlers, they're a great tar pit unit, and with the right support, they can be deadly, but there wasn't any support there for them, and so they were kind of tar pitting without a purpose. There was nothing behind them to kill the things that they were trying to slow down. But, you know, again, it's tough to say what you could have done differently. I don't think the TAC really were pulling their weight in this list.
Basically, the only thing I was using them for was as a screen, and I don't know if it was really needed or not.
No.
I might have been better off dropping them, dropping Lanissa. I don't know what else I could have dropped, but maybe try to fit it in some Forge Guard.
Yeah, or even a Hearn and John, or you know, a couple more guns, just something where the Boomhowlers are standing there and holding the line, so that the things behind them can be killing stuff. Because that's basically what you needed. You need something that was high accuracy to be killing the gray riders, the Outriders, while the Boomhowlers were trying to hold the line. But anyways, I think we're okay with a 4 for tactics. It was a solid performance and no major blunders. Okay, so scenario, Nick, how do you feel about your scenario awareness this game?
I think it was very high. I basically, from the very beginning of the game, I was concentrating on the scenario. I moved, like, the second turn, I ran the Earthbreaker in the zone to make sure that Aaron could never contest unless he killed my Jack, which I was going to make nearly unchargeable. and the Earthbreaker was mainly focused on killing the objectives, and I had, you know, half my army focused on killing the objectives and making sure they got done and dead. I think I would probably give myself a 4 just because I really wanted to score that zone on turn 2, but I didn't save enough attacks to kill the assault commandos. And so that was, it's a tiny mistake, but it's a mistake. Yeah.
I would be comfortable giving you a 5 on this. I think you were about as solid a scenario game as I've had the pleasure to witness. What about you, Aaron? How do you feel about it?
I'd be okay with a 5.
All right. 5 it is.
Well.
Okay, and luck. So, as we earlier established, 24 successful
tough rolls.
Yeah, 24 successful tough rolls.
In one turn, I passed 15 and failed 5. That's definitely a luck 4.
Yeah,
it's no less. I still don't know if it qualifies for 5 because I don't think we've seen that game yet. I think to get that luck 5, you need to have that caster kill needing boxcars. But I think this is a solid 4.
Yeah, no, I agree. Aaron, anything you want to add?
It's a 4, not a 5, for two reasons. There were a few failed rolls, so it's not like a 100%.
I did roll double snakes on a bunch of hit rolls too.
Right.
Yes.
Or
But I
just
think the
snake.
reason that it's so spectacular in part is because of the Outriders, because each of their turns on every attack that they had, they were hitting multiple units or
Yeah, you know,
multiple models rather.
the volume of attack rolls those guys put out was mind-boggling. It was more than I ever expected.
Yeah, so it wasn't that there was like tons and tons and tons and tons of shots from every possible unit that I could get in there, which like it was only two. It was just that so many units were being hit in multiples, and toughing on each attack that it makes it seem spectacular. Not that I had all of my army trying to attack like this one unit, and that one unit just was like successfully each time. Toughing.
Right.
Otherwise, I might push that up to a five. Whereas, like, I had exhausted all of my resources just to focus on one thing. So, yeah, I'd say a four.
All right. And now my favorite, derptitude. Now, before I point out the derps that I noticed, Nick, which derps did you notice?
Well, I mean, nothing. I mean, there was nothing that really affected the game, I don't think. But I don't know, maybe you noticed something I didn't. As far as derptitude, I can't think of much other than, you know, the one time that I activated the Earthbreaker before Thor was silly, but other than that, I don't think there's any real game-changing derps.
Okay, so
You missed solid ground a couple times.
yep, that was significant.
Yeah, okay, yeah, that's true. So that would affect a couple things.
I think it only affected two models.
Yeah,
It
I mean,
wasn't
yeah.
gigantic.
I guess that is the derp though, is that I had solid ground up, and I had my Boomhauer so far away that only two were in my control area. So I mean, that is the derp right there, is that the whole point of this list, the reason why this list is supposed to be good, like, you know, I got it from Chain Attack, right? So I mean, it wasn't my own creation or anything. The reason why it's supposed to be good is because you have the Gorton, you've Gorton given out solid ground, so all your tough stuff gets hit, toughs doesn't isn't knocked down. That's the reason why it's good, and I wasn't taking advantage of it. I was completely missing that benefit.
Okay, so I think a derp one for the one for okay, well, you know what? I take it back. I think a derp two, one for the lack of solid ground in your boom howlers, and the two for relatively inefficient list design. Linus Rasil, the TAC, and
Yeah, you know, I actually like that was like really was a derp because I forgot she was in the list.
yeah.
I'd like because I had made the list with Forge Guard and I took them out and I didn't need her anymore.
Nope.
But so now it was like 2 points of basically wasted. I didn't need Hunter's Mark. My stuff was fast enough. But I did use the Ice Bolt a couple times. She killed the objective twice.
Yeah. So
Yeah, no, she was extra.
I think this was a very solid game. No major derps. Okay, let's move on to Nick to Aaron. So Kador, the feat use of Kador. Aaron, why don't you tell us about how you think you used P.I. Rusk's feat?
I would go a one.
Ironically, that's
It
what I was going to
wasn't used
say.
very well. It was, I didn't pop it in an order that made any sense. The only benefit that I got from the feat was a defensive one. It would have
No,
affected.
Iris got the plus two bonus for his shot on that Nis that he missed.
That's true.
Yes.
That's true.
And I got the tough benefit. That's it. The offensive benefit, it would have affected the majority of the assault commandos. They didn't necessarily need it because the Nis that they were attacking are such low armor, but it would have been a benefit nonetheless. An additional die is always welcomed. But I just kind of did it to do it because I had it, but it wasn't used out of effectively at all. So
I think you did it on the right turn. I think that it was absolutely the correct turn to pop it. However, yeah, you definitely, you know, you didn't get the most of it because you didn't get your Winter Guard in. And you didn't pop it before the assault commandos activated, so you didn't get the benefit of the attack rolls, which is too bad because you did miss a bunch of attacks against Nis that turn, and that would have made a difference.
I'm going to go ahead and give you recommend that we give you a 2 instead of a 1. Not because I think it was a particularly brilliant use of the feat or anything like that, but you did use it. That's important. You got some half decent mileage out of it, and the fact that you didn't forget about having it altogether and just, leave it at the wayside, I think is significant. You use it in an okay time. It saved 5 of your troops. It's not bad, but for future reference, P.I. Rusk takes incredible Kador infantry, which are just almost hands down the best infantry outside of Krix in the game, and he gives them Weapon Master and plus two
Oh,
to
no.
hit.
I read that wrong. It's plus 2 to melee damage.
Sorry. His feat gives him plus two to hit and damage. His spell gives them Weapon Master. And then if you're using it on Winter Guard, you can have Kovnik Joe giving them another plus three on their damage. You can have an entire team of Winter Guard charging in at, I think, Pow 14 Weapon Masters. Like, the fact that Nyx Earthbreaker was still standing at the end of the game is only a testament to the fact that it's the first time you've used P.I. Rusk. Because that thing should have been buried by your infantry. Forget your warjacks. Your warjacks would crush them.
Yes, but I mean, for me to have used the feat that way, it would have taken a completely different
Oh, no
setup and a
question. No
completely
question.
different.
You would have had to have the Winter Guard in a very different position. You would have had to have the Assault Commandos in a, such a place. Yada, yada, yada. I mean, even the Grey Lords, the cavalry, would get the bonus from it if you really wanted them to. I don't imagine a situation they're ever going to be 14 inches away from Iruzk, but if you needed to, you can. And because Nick was focusing so much energy on keeping his Earthbreaker safe from Behemoth, a perfectly intelligent maneuver, you had this availability to use your infantry to crush it. And unfortunately, now that he's kind of seen what Iruzk can do once, it's going to be tougher to pull it off. Hint: use it against Adam. He'll never see it
Anyone
coming.
else? Yeah.
But anyways, so yeah, I think the fact that you use your feet, it wasn't optimal, no question, but you did use it. You got some mileage out of it. It was good timing. The turn that you used it was the turn you probably should have been using it on. But yeah, you have to figure out a way to finagle a bit more mileage out of it next time. All right, Nick, what about tactically? How do you think Aaron did?
Wait, so did we agree on
Oh
one or
yeah, sorry.
two?
I thought
'Cause...
it too. Nick, yours
Yeah, two.
too?
I agree with two.
Okay,
Okay.
perfect. So tactics, Nick, how do you feel?
Tactics, a lot of this was because of unfamiliarity with models, but I think that the placement of the Outriders and the Winter Guard on that same flank together was kind of a waste, just because the first couple turns the Outriders were kind of blocking the Winter Guard from doing anything because they're just in their way, I just wonder how differently this game would have been if you had put your Winter Guard, say, on your left flank or on your right flank instead of on your left flank. Or behind the assault commandos, any other place really, just because where they were, they never really got to the fight. They really just helped clean up Ruhnhallers.
And put a bit of damage on the Earthbreaker.
Like 2 points.
In Aaron's defense again, not that I think it was a brilliant tactical maneuver, but I completely understand why he did what he did. Taking an unknown unit of cavalry, this is the first time you've used cavalry, isn't it?
Well, light cavalry. I mean, I've played the Steelheads
Oh, okay.
twice.
So taking an unused unit of cavalry, and especially one that, the forums are really torn on the utility of the Outriders, which is just insane, but whatever. And using them to hold down an entire flank, I can understand why you had, a unit there to support them. But now that you know, hopefully next time you can finagle that battle line a little bit better.
Yeah, no, I agree somewhat in that, backing up the Outriders wasn't a bad idea. But the play the way he played the Outriders though did hamper the Winter Guard too much. He should have kept them out of the way. But I mean, again, it's the first time he's used them. It's, you gotta figure it out.
And again, this is really what we're saying is the fact that the Outriders performed too well. that if they had performed worse, that his tactics would have been flawless. But because they were wiping out everything in the way and not dying in response, you know, they...
The Windguard had nothing to do.
The Windguard had nothing to do. So, you know, I can't penalize him for that. I think this was an average tactical game on Aaron's part. Honestly, other than an unfamiliarity with using P.I. Rusk and the capability of using the Outriders. Now, I have to tell you, I don't think the Outriders are ever going to perform quite this well again, because this was a perfect tactical matchup for them. They were going up against an army that a flank that couldn't hit them and that couldn't move fast enough to engage them. Like, it was perfect. Whatever you're using them against next won't.
One thing I wanted to say about tactics was Irisk has some just amazing upkeep spells, and you kind of didn't use most of them. You know, like,
because
Flesh was only up for two turns. And Superiority, you only put on this brigand the one turn you wanted him to charge. I think that you maybe missed an opportunity that you could have been using Superiority like for the first couple turns to get him further up the board into like threatening positions and stuff.
Yes, but I, for maybe the last two turns, I wanted to move Irisk, but because the Nis never died, I didn't want to move him.
Right.
Mm-hmm. I was too afraid of him. Even if the Nis just stood up and moved to engage but didn't, you know, they didn't attack on that turn, they would still be engaging Irisk, and then I would have to use Irisk to kill those Nis.
Yeah, yeah.
But
he's got quick work. I mean, come on.
I just...
Sure. That is the stupidest...
I just didn't want to do that.
Okay.
And so my right flank ended up being this idiotic shimmy between a Behemoth and Irisk. Irisk's kind of staying in cover, and Behemoth blocking potential charge range or potential shots, which it didn't even matter because of the knockdown torpedo. Yeah. I wanted to eventually get him over farther to my left flank to take advantage of those spells, but because I just never felt safe doing it, I didn't do it.
Right.
Yeah. No. That's fair. No. It's all understandable, but still, I think it adds up to, you know, not quite an optimal use of Irisk's abilities. Yeah. I mean, obviously there are reasons for it, but...
next time, just take a cheap arc node. I mean, it'll make him so much better.
that hurts. That's a knife. That's twisting a knife into Kator heart.
Okay, so I think a three. Nick, what do you think?
Here's the other thing I was going to say, is that I don't think the win or the Outriders hampered the Winter Guard. I think what hampered the Winter Guard was the forest.
Ah.
Because they had to get all the way to the left of it and all the way to the right of it to get shots on.
Okay, I suppose that's true, but that's still your fault. Because you didn't have to put them behind it.
Well, anyway, what was I supposed to do, though? Put them all onto one side or the other?
I honestly don't have an answer for you, but I kind of do wonder how the game would have gone if you had placed the Winter Guard onto your far right flank and then used them to kill all the Nis kind of thing. Yeah. I don't know. Who knows? If you had deployed them there, I might not have put the Nis there, so who knows?
Rabbit chasing all day. Okay, yeah, so exactly. I still think it's a three. Nick, how do you feel?
No, a three is fair. Yeah, it was a decent, solid tactics, especially considering it's a new caster. Yeah.
Aaron, what do you think? Are we okay with a three?
Well, I felt pretty good about this game. Now I don't feel so good. So, fuck both of you.
Sorry about that.
I think you did a good job, honestly. The only reason it's... Only reason it's a three and not higher is because Irusk is such an incredible, incredible buffing warcaster. And it's going to take time. The same as the last game I played against Nick when he was using Gareth. It's the second time he ever put Gareth on the table. Of course he's going to make mistakes with him.
And by the way, just mentioning, I am going to try and play him more often because I do see potential in his abilities. I just wish his feet didn't suck so much.
You know, So I didn't catch the very end of this game. I kind of suspected this is what was going to happen, but I really wanted Aaron to win because I want you to keep using Irusk. Honestly, Aaron, he's a great warcaster. He's one of the best Kator's got, and I think that his playstyle is really going to complement your own particular tactical strengths.
Well, no, yeah, no, I didn't lose. I don't feel like I lost because I played him wrong, per se, more because of fucking stupid Earthbreaking is bullshit.
I will agree with you. The Earthbreaker is an amazing colossal, and I love the shit out of it.
Lots of shots.
Okay, so Aaron, why don't you tell us a bit about how you felt about the scenario?
The whole, almost the sole intention of the commandos was to go into the zone and just sit in the zone.
Right. They did that effectively.
And they did that pretty well. Up until the last one died, they were doing what I wanted them to do. They held the zone. You are right that I maybe should have handled taking out my objective differently, i.e., shooting at it instead of charging Spriggan in.
Know, charging is a very reliable way to do it, though. I mean, when I was shooting it, like I kept on feeling the wounded, or I missed it, rolled snake eyes kind of thing. At least with melee, you can't miss it.
Yeah, and honestly, the only reason that Spriggan was even up there was because he was trying to kill the Nis the previous
Yeah, I
turn.
remember.
So that's why, otherwise, I probably would have played that differently as well, had those Nis died. Actually, you know what?
That wasn't a bad
I
move. I mean, I
treated the
thought.
exact same because Spriggan would have been up there anyways.
Right.
Yeah, no, that was a pretty decent move. I mean, it's too bad for you the Nissal tuft. But you know, getting the Spriggan into that, like, up the field and threatening from that the right side like that, it was. I think it was a good move. It's just you can't predict tough rolls.
No, I agree.
It, because the objective's gone, and possibly your superiority. And Nick and I actually kind of had a discussion after the game was over, that with superiority, even though it Earthbreaker was in his back arc with superiority with the plus two bonus, he probably still would have been able to just turn around, and move, and just get into
Melee range,
combat with Earthbreaker, and then just
yeah,
have
possibly.
a bunch of attacks.
Yeah, that's a good thought.
Yeah, because he has reach too, right? So speed 6 with reach, 8-inch threat. It's the zone's not that big. You can see Earthbreakers on the edge of the zone, and so that means there's only 7 inches between him and the far edge of the zone. So he would have been in walking range.
Okay, Nick, how do you feel about the scenario for Aaron?
I think he did well. You know what I mean? Like, I think I would almost also nominate him for a five, just because, like, he did what he needed to do as well. I just happened to have more, more power, more guns going. You know what I mean? Like, but I think that he did everything he could.
No, I agree. And even with his radical flanking maneuver of the Grey Riders, I keep calling them Grey Riders, the
Well,
Outriders.
I guess they kind of are because they're Grey Lord
Yeah,
turnkeys.
they're Grey Lord
Outriders. Yeah, okay.
Outriders.
So the with even with the extreme flanking maneuver of the Outriders, it's still tied into the scenario to an extent because it was pulling resources that Nick should have been pushing into the like pushing forward to have to deal with the cavalry that were coming around his back. So overall, I think this was some really brilliant scenario play. It's just that unfortunately you're in the rock versus paper scissors of Arcane, sorry, Assault Commandos against Nis. The Nis came out on top. And who knows, next time you play, they won't tough 10 times and it will come out in the Assault Commandos' favor.
Maybe.
Also, if you had done your
I mean,
feat
it was. It
first.
also, it was the combo of the Earthbreaker as well. Remember, the Earthbreaker knocked down six Assault Commandos with one shot, and so the Nist came in and just swept up the pieces.
Well, it knocked down 10 Assault Commandos that entire turn.
Yeah, it's true.
So
Two knockdown shots.
that was the entire squad. That's all of them except for the flamethrowers.
Not yeah.
So.
Well, some of those were flamethrowers, but
Okay.
anyway, yeah, it was pretty good.
I am comfortable with giving you a five for scenario, Aaron. How do you feel about it?
Four.
Four?
I don't think I did well enough to warrant a five. You say I did everything I possibly could, and I don't think that's true. I used an entire unit to basically hold it, which I think warrants a four. Like, I was actively trying to contest, and it wasn't the case here because of guys dying, but trying to score points. But if it really came down to really focusing on getting points instead of trying to kill people, I could have run units when I activated and shot with them, or moved units that didn't move at all.
Okay.
So I don't think it deserve. I deserve a five, but I'm okay with a four.
All right. I'll.
Yeah, you convinced us.
I can. I accept your justification. Four it is. Okay. What about your luck? Looking at the tough roll breakdown, I mean, your feat turn, you got average luck. Nick's good luck obviously bleeds off a little bit into your bad luck, but.
In this case, I don't know if it does, because none of my good luck really mattered that much. I mean, sure, because he was just basically wiping up my boomhellers for fun. It was target practice. I mean, they weren't doing anything anyway. Yeah. Like, I mean, like, yeah, I toughed a million times. I guess it did affect what was going on with the NIS, but I don't know. It just, for some reason, I can't even really explain it. It just doesn't feel like my luck mattered to Aaron as much this game. I don't know. What did you feel differently? Aaron?
No, I do agree. It was infuriating that you toughed that much, which is good luck for you. But it definitely didn't bleed over into my bad luck as much as other games where the luck has bled, so to speak.
Right. It's not like the Boomhauers were actually holding the zone or doing anything significant.
Yeah, they were just kind of there and I was killing them and they were toughing and it was bothering me, but they weren't killing me back.
Right.
I was just kind of shooting at them until they were finally all dead.
Right. Okay, you know, I'll buy that.
The only time I really felt like the luck I felt was worse on the right flank, because it was like those guys, the Nis, are actively attacking me, and they just won't die when I attack them.
Right.
So I'd say maybe.
I think this is probably a three. Yeah.
Yeah.
Nick, you?
Yeah, I'd say it's average.
All right, and last but not least, Derptitude. Nick, why don't you start?
I'd like to hear from Aaron. I'd like to know what you think were your biggest mistakes.
All right.
The units that toughed and then were subsequently knocked down on Irisk's feet.
Oh yeah, that was a little bit better. Yeah. For the first couple goes, we forgot that, or we didn't read that Irisk's feet prevents knockdown.
Yeah.
Whoops.
I don't know.
Yeah, I can't really think of any major ones. I mean, okay, there's obviously the derp of having Irusk within 14 inches of the Earthbreaker. That's a little derpy.
Yeah, and that is, you know, that's your control range, so you might have been wise to make sure that you stayed out of that range. Yeah.
It doesn't have to be up by much, it just has to be a millimeter.
Okay, but here's my defense for that. Yeah. If I moved Irusk back, kill box.
Right. To move
it. If I moved him laterally, if I moved him to the left, he's out of cover and he's still within 14 inches of Earthbreaker.
Right.
If I moved him to the right, I'm probably out of range of Earthbreaker, but now he's more open for charges from the Nis.
Mm-hmm. The Nis don't have reach, so they can't hit him over the wall. And if you
no, but that's what I'm saying. I couldn't move back even a little bit.
No.
I had to move completely laterally and then around, which I did want to do, but again.
The Nis.
Because the Nis didn't die, and I was too afraid to keep him out in the open, I didn't move him.
Yeah.
I just left him there. I felt like if he was there with Defense 19, and if Behemoth was there...
blocking line of sight.
Blocking line of sight, they'd be okay. Mm-hmm. I didn't anticipate how effective the torpedoes would be.
Yeah.
If that's a derp, then... That's fine, but
you know, it's solid.
Maybe not. I mean, because I guess you didn't seem aware that they ignored cover.
No, I didn't even know they ignored cover.
Yeah, so I guess you so. I don't know if that goes into derp or not. Because I mean, that obviously, you know, it sucks to get surprised like that.
Yeah, here's the point. The cover was like the secondary thing. The tertiary or the
primary.
The primary thing was that Behemoth was there blocking.
Yeah.
The shot. It didn't end up being the case. Yeah. You've moved him enough that you could skirt the edge of his base.
Yeah, although I knocked him down anyway. Yeah.
That's why I didn't move him.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I was enough. Hey, this is fine.
Nope, that's fair. I'll give you that. I have to say the first time I played the Earthbreaker against the Earthbreaker with Stryker, I had almost identical thing happen to me. Stryker was behind cover. He was, you know, 12 inches away from the Earthbreaker, and I'm like, well, I'm behind cover, I'm safe. What's the worst that could possibly happen? Whoops. So, you know what? I'm okay with giving you a derp one, actually. Nick, what do you think?
Yeah, no, that's it seems fair. I mean, like, you know, there really weren't that many big
No,
mistakes. It was
couple
a
tiny little things, but
pretty solid game.
very solid game.
Yeah, I agree.
And if it wasn't for that assassination run, if let's say you had missed on your torpedo attack, which you will do, you know,
Yeah, I mean, I needed a 10, so that's average
40% of the
bonus.
time, you're going to miss that shot. I think Aaron was in a much better position than you were, and
Yeah, no, and you know, if I hadn't gotten that assassination attempt, I had a real problem on my hands with those Outriders. Oh, that's one thing I thought about when we were talking about my feat. I might have, if I'd failed the assassination run, I might have actually used Gordon's feat to push the Outriders somewhere so that they wouldn't be elevated and they'd be minus three defense,
Right.
and then Gordon could probably kill one with his hand cannon. And then one, and the I think there's one more TAC alive. There might have been two, I forget. But they probably could have killed the other one. And so then at least that would have helped a lot. But I don't know if I could have achieved it or not.
Tricky. Okay, well, that was our first Steamroller 2014 game, and it was actually a really good one, a very enjoyable game both to watch and to listen about. I hope everyone else enjoyed it as much as I did. I was actually attending the game, but I painted the whole time. Like, I just popped my head in occasionally just to annoy both Nick and Aaron by pointing out rules that they were getting wrong or forgetting. The rest of the time, I had my nose in my my models. Speaking of painting models, Aaron, what do you got on the painting table these days?
I still have five steelhead riflemen left. They're just sitting there, haven't touched them. And I put together the Iron Fang pikemen, who were really irritating to put
Oh
together.
no.
The pikes themselves, because of the leverage, or the weight rather, I thought that I could just glue the arms into the sockets and that would be okay. Was not the case. So I had to pin all of them
Ouch.
because they just kept falling off, getting torn off by the weight of the end of the pike. So I've put together most of them. They're just waiting to get primed, and then I'll get those out on the table. And I think they'll be a better use of the Iron Fang Kovnik. I mean, they share the same name, so why wouldn't they?
Exactly. You might want to look up the Black Fang UA, or the Black Dragon UA for the Iron Fangs. There, it's a popular UA, and field allowance too. Basically, it gives them Iron Zeal, so you can make them armor 22 for a turn.
Yeah, they have that many feet, and is it the Iron Fang Pikemen themselves that have the many feet, or is that the
It's
officer standard?
the UA gives them their mini feet.
And I think, I don't know if the Iron Fangs themselves get precision strike, or if the UA gives them precision strike, but whatever it is, that's an incredible ability. So.
Yeah, I mean, I think both the standard Iron Fang UA or UA and the Black Dragon UA are both considered really strong. And so a lot of people actually run both of them.
Clever. Okay, what about you, Nick? What do you got on the painting table these days?
Well, I mean, I think I mentioned last week that I picked up recently House Guard Rifleman with UA, and I picked up Gareth, and I picked up the Fane Knight for Retribution. And so those guys, I've put them all together, I've primed them, and I've based them, and I've arced them. So they're ready to play for people with less standards like me. But as far as the painting goes, I still need to finish Vyros too. So I want to do him next because he's been half finished for like 6 months now. So I got to get him done. That's important. After that, I think with the release of Assyria, she works really really well with the Dawnguard Invictors. And so they are the first unit I ever bought, and I still haven't finished them. And so I and then after Vyros 2, I'm gonna go back. I'm gonna finish my last, I think, seven Invictors that I need to finish, and then I'll feel rested.
cool. Okay, and for my painting table, I'm still trying to get a 50-point Menoth list painted up by the end of January, or the start of February, more accurately. And I've been making a bit of effort towards that. So I have my three racks. My one unit of racks is basically base coated, almost completely done now. I have Vilmun almost finished, and the Hierophant almost done, and I have finished my my Warcaster, which is the Harbinger of Menoth and Ephyra. Those are going to be my two Warcasters. So next, I just have to do a whole butt ton of Warjacks, and I've got this crazy idea for an Epic Fiora list, which will be two Vanquishers and Adjudicator. I'm going to call the list Everything Burns because those are all AoEs that cause fire on hits, so it'll be awesome. And the only problem is that I have no infantry. The only unit of infantry I currently own are two units of Cinerators.
Ooh, not popular.
Yeah, and two units of Knight Exemplars. Not Exemplar Errants, which are awesome, but the Knight Exemplars, which are not bad. And with the Harbinger can be pretty incredible, but not a popular choice. So yeah, I need to seriously think about getting some infantry at some point, and an avatar, because running the avatar is
Paint what you've got first.
paint. But I'm going to paint what I've got first. That's the plan. I've already got like seven Menoth Warjacks. Two of them are magnetized. I have two dedicated Redeemers and a dedicated Vanquisher and all sorts of crap. So,
Yeah, paint what you got is very good advice that I rarely follow.
yeah.
I mean, with Retribution, I have so much of it that isn't painted that I've given up on playing that stuff painted. But my mercs, I'm still 100%. Oh, not 100, but anyway, I don't buy any more mercs until I've painted all the ones that I have. So right now, I still have, I have a Basher and I have an Unholt to paint. But
Oh my god, I
I
have to
mean.
paint Ayana and Holt. Ah, okay.
So many
So
things,
many
so many
things.
things.
All right, well, I think that's it for us. Next week, I think I'm going to be playing our Crix player. We might,
Oh, lucky
yeah,
you.
might be doing a podcast on that. We'll see if he's up for that. And we might also go to a local game store and see if we can play some random strangers and see if they can crush our hopes and dreams as well. So, stay tuned.
For all the Kaydorans out there, thanks for listening to combosmite.com because it's state mandated.